Yes. Hello, hello.
Oh, good. You can hear me?
Yes.
All is good.
You got all your right. Acoustic bass out there.
Got my acoustic bass.
Such a pretty instrument.
It's an awesome one. Yep. I'm a big fan of it. Don't play it as often as I'd like to. But ain't that always the way of it? We never find time for our
Poppy
hobbies.
Girl, and you want to come be the producer today, Poppy? Jack is asleep on our bed, so
yeah, it sounds about like
he's not going to be able to work today.
That's how it works.
I had a dream last night, one of my dreams that I have, where I was furious at you. And then I wake up and I'm still furious because I have to think if it was a dream or if it actually happened.
Sure. Yep.
I wonder what that is, because I have those dreams a couple of times a year.
I
mean, screaming rage, furious.
Sure.
Like, would never, ever happen in real life. It never has happened in real life.
I'm sure there are those who would say what you wanted to happen in real life.
Nope.
But you're actually realizing in your dream what you would want.
Nope.
I don't know if that's true. Who could know? But do you ever remember what it is that I did?
Oh, yeah. I always remember my dreams, all my dreams.
No. But why you were so angry?
Yes.
Okay.
I always remember the plot of my dream.
Okay. Little sidetrack here. So what else? A dream in color, typically?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Other senses? Do you ever have smells or sounds?
No, but I experience pain in my dreams.
Okay, but no smell, sound, or taste?
No.
Touch or anything like that. Okay.
Well, if I'm getting attacked by wolves or snakes or something,
you are
an absolute
feeling
terror. Well, I'm not sure if it's actual pain or if I'm so afraid of my dreams that I think I'm in pain, but it's probably just fear.
Right.
Base primal fear.
But you wake up before you're torn apart by wolves.
No. I usually wake up while I'm being torn apart by wolves or being repeatedly bitten in the same place in my arm over and over again by horrible snakes, giant
Jesus
snakes.
Christ.
I have terrible nightmares.
Yeah, that is bad.
Well, you know that.
I do know it sometimes. I tend to be rather, I wonder if it's sometimes if you have spicy food right before you go to bed.
No, it's not that.
Sometimes.
Maybe.
Sometimes
you wake me up when you're having a dream, which is clearly a nightmare, but I don't think you remember in the morning that you've had a bad dream. And I'm always wondering if it's the right thing to do to let you have the dream or if I should wake you up out of it. But since you usually don't remember that you've dreamt, I usually just let you go.
There's some conventional wisdom one way or the other about that, right? Whether you're supposed to awaken, you know, sleepwalkers or... I don't know if people are having
two things
night
in the
terrors.
Movies that never ever happen in real life, and in good movies this happens. So I wonder why screenwriters do this. One is people splashing their face with cold water when they're trying to calm down. No one in real life has ever done that or does that. And the other is somebody jerking out of bed, sitting upright after a nightmare, gasping for air. That never happens in real life. Why do they do that, Michael?
It must for some people.
Never. Never. Why?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the best is the dream within the dream, right? So you... you do this in horror movies all the time, right? So, but yeah, I don't know what those are. I mean, they're obviously dramatized, excessively dramatized versions of, you know, this is what it means to dream or whatever. And, you know, I think we cut some slack just with the, conceits of the screen. You know, we know that most people probably don't sleep on their back with the lighting just right and the pillows, you know, so that they sit bolt upright and the quilts are exactly as they as the props department left them.
Yes.
I mean, everybody else just like, you know, sleeping in their smelly underwear or something. Anyway, but yeah, it's you have to represent these things on screen in a tidy format.
Mm-hmm.
apnea. I don't know, do folks, they show people sleeping in movies where they like have apnea or their sleep masks. Is everybody using a sleep mask or not? You know, Philips has their big lawsuit with the sleep masks.
What's the lawsuit?
Oh, I don't know. People are breathing toxic, whatever. But
you mean like an apnea sleep mask?
Yeah, they do the apnea mask, but then something's deteriorating within so the respiration filter. I think people are breathing in some of that. I think that's essentially what the suit's about. I don't know how truthful it is, but that's what folks are saying.
Because we have five pets, we have five vacuum cleaners.
Yeah.
We have two of the little handheld battery operated vacuum cleaners. We have the Miele Beast. We have the Bissell, like really loud floor.
That's like a carpet cleaner, though.
Then we have a cute little just kind of dustbuster cleaner. Oh, and then we also have two fabric cleaners, like handheld Bissell fabric cleaners.
Mm-hmm.
The Philips electric powered, like electric plug into the wall vacuum cleaner has all of this promise, all of these attachments.
Yeah.
And it has no, after using it like two times, it has no suction power. And I can't figure out why. Nothing's blocked. I've looked at everything. It can't be broken. There's got to be a switch or something that I haven't switched on or switched off. But I'm so curious as to why this thing isn't working. I'm thinking about pulling it apart.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, I can look at it too if you think it's something obvious. But yeah, it might just not be a very good design.
But it was really expensive.
Yeah, well,
Philips does not make good products.
Products here are expensive.
It's consumer products from Philips are so, sorry, Philips, but so shitty. just go make your MRI machines and cut off the consumer business.
Focus mostly on the med tech and the, you know, taking HP's share of the med tech. Mm-hmm. And I think baby products. I think Philips makes a lot on their baby products. Mm-hmm.
But anyway, there's a lawsuit because people are inhaling toxic fumes.
I think that's one of the things that they're talking about, yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it's not every version of the mask, but, you know, probably some of their manufacturing partners, you know, whatever, put in a dodgy filter or something, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's so... I obviously don't know much about these issues, but I'm not afraid to talk. Oh, sorry. I'm just saying that I obviously don't know much about sleep apnea, but it does seem strange to me that there's, you know, so many treatments and suggestions about sleep apnea, and there are some. I think for a lot of folks, often American folks, of a particular size and or age, yes, some of these. But I mean, our tissues do soften up, mm-hmm. right? Like our uvulas are dangling at this age anyway. So, you know, even if we have good airflow, all these things are going to be vibrating and oscillating in a way that they didn't used to.
Yeah. About 10 years ago, I noticed that I could, how do you describe this without it just sounding gross?
No, go ahead, do that version.
Like, if you push the tip of your tongue down on the side of your cheek,
mm-hmm.
like let's say you've got something stuck down there.
Yep.
I can go the extent that my tongue will reach and barely hit the side of my cheek. Which didn't used to happen because my cheeks are sagging.
Oh,
jowly.
Right. Yeah.
You
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
Cavernous.
Yeah. That's no, cool. all this stuff starts to go south. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's more likely that the tongue's fishing around for these types because with, you know, age and gum recession, mm-hmm. Then it's more likely that things are caught between the teeth.
Yeah. I get my toothbrush down in there just to kind of. Mm-hmm. You know, oh gosh.
Yep.
Not pleasant. All right. So as our listener knows, excuse me.
Just hit me.
Yep. Last year I had my four pillars of health, which I achieved. This year I'm building on that with trying to build my strength training, which has been very difficult. Once you lose muscle mass, it's really hard to get it back. I'm discovering. and working on my posture, which is also very hard, very painful. It's hard, you know, when you're young and you work out and you get sore muscles and that hurts. But just the actual act of exercising is painful in a way where you just feel the tendons are either contracting or just stretching out. You just feel like you're on the brink of injury at all times. But I'm working on it. And because the other thing that I'll be working on in the next couple of years is building up my skills. So the theme is, do I want to be helped or do I want to be able to help? And I want to be a helper. So as an example, over the past weekend, I organized a carpentry class for beginners, for women only. And so there were five of us from the American Women's Club of Amsterdam who did this weekend-long carpentry class. It is really hard and very exciting to even just have the most basic of skills and know that there is a whole world beyond that of skills that you could acquire over a lifetime. And of course, the gear, the tools are just mesmerizing. And man, you could just, those, the handheld tools, like, you know, the 1500 euro, like domino slat cutter. So it only does one thing. It cuts holes in the side of the wood to put a domino in, which is a version of a biscuit or dowel, all these terms that I'm learning. Or the router. Or the thing that like smooths off your cut. Oh, that is so satisfying. It just smooths it off so perfectly. And the skill of like just having these tools in your hand and learning that it isn't so much always about lining up sight lines, but the feel, like feeling that the tool is in the right position and then letting the tool do all the work and then just guiding it. So for example, I had to, I was using the jigsaw, a handheld jigsaw to cut a piece of wood on a diagonal. And I was kind of going off of the line. And so I was trying to move the jigsaw back into position, which of course it won't do. Thinking you could kind of do that like you could with a piece of fabric underneath the sewing machine where you can guide the fabric, but you can't do that with jigsaw and wood. So it's all about feel and just it, and then it's, and the other thing that's great about carpentry, our teacher was telling us there's a solution to every problem. So if you mess up, there's probably several ways you can correct the mistake. Nothing is fatal. It isn't like pottery, for example, where at any point along the many, many steps and processes, you could break or destroy your piece. In carpentry, you probably can fix or resuscitate something. And she was showing us, because I was kind of the worst one in the class, which I'm proud to say, you know, because I have, that's why I'm there. You know, things that are visual or are difficult for me because I'm not a visual person. And so there was a moment where we realized that my dominoes weren't lining up with the little domino divots that I'd cut. And so all she did was just hack off a piece of the domino so that it fit. So there was a little gap in there, but it kind of didn't matter because you're still gluing it together anyway. That sort of thing.
Right, right. Because it's still, so basically you have a little gap then.
Yeah, just a little one.
Yeah, but it's still doing what it's supposed to do in terms of joining two pieces of wood together.
And mostly. I found a real parallel there in business, because in business, when you're running a startup, you come and you come into contact with problems all the time. And in business, I do take pride in the fact that I think I'm pretty good at coming up with solutions very quickly that maybe other people wouldn't have thought of. Not so much with carpentry, but maybe I'll get there. It isn't as natural in carpentry, but when I learned from the masters, it helps you just think about things in a different way. Loved it. And also, the tools are very intimidating, and it's very different to watch somebody show you how to do it, and then you put your hands on the tools, and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm going to turn on this power tool. But it's mostly you're combating your imagination. Just imagining you slicing your face off or severing your finger it's actually kind of hard to do that. You'd really have to misuse the tool in quite a drastic way to get your finger in position where you would slice it off with the jigsaw, you know? But it's so gross jigsaw, and it's so painful that to think about. You're like, whoa!
Right.
But it was really fun. And again, also working with women, it's just so nice because everybody just gives everyone else, there's no ego. Everybody, no one's trying to front or show off. We all know that we're just abject beginners. We give each other as much time as we need. Everyone was so patient with each other.
Yep.
It's just so nice, you know?
No, it sounds like fun. Wish that, would have preferred to have, you know, some formal training with them. I should probably have made time for things like, you know, wood shop or metal shop or even auto shop in like high school. But, you know, it's whatever. You think it's more important to take Latin class or something. Like, all right.
That was a giant waste of time. 2 years of
think Latin. That you're supposed to do or whatever. But,
oh, because everyone's going to be a lawyer. So you all need to learn.
Be a doctor or a lawyer. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But the thing is, like, those Latin roots in words are also the same roots of words that we use in everyday English anyway. So it's like, oh, I could figure that out just from the words I use anyway. I don't have to know that Agricola is the root word for agriculture because agriculture is the word I use anyway.
Yep.
So if there's some medical term that has the word agro in it, I know it has something to do with growing plants. I'm so annoyed that I took 2 years of Latin. I think everybody should take a woodworking or a basic electrician or wiring class because one of the women in our group had taken a shop class when she was in high school and she was really good and comfortable and calm with all the tools. I'm like, Marcy, you either have a natural talent or you're totally sharking us. She's like, no, I took a shop class. I remember some of this stuff, you know?
I think it's good for people to have some experience with that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But also, I just want to go back to, so you're talking about, you know, your sort of learning style and how visual you might be. You had plans that you were following in this project. And so is that actually written out on a piece of paper, like IKEA instructions or something? Or I'm just wondering, basically, if you were to look at something, say, on a computer, you know, like 2D representation versus actually getting your hands on something, does that help to understand? Once you see how things are operating in the three dimensions, does that help you with the visual?
No, nothing helps me.
Okay.
And so our instructor had pre-cut all of the pieces for us as we made a spice rack. And so the sort of shelves in the spice rack, like the front of those shelves had a little angle in it. And then the sides of the spice rack were cut in angle because the top shelves were narrower than the ones at the bottom. And at the bottom, there's a drawer. And so she was showing us, like, as you're putting these together, put a little triangle on the side of the shelves to remember, like, which way is up. You know, things that you would see in directions anyway, like put a little A on this plank and then another little A on the plank it's going to go into, just to kind of orient yourself. And I was writing notes all over my planks, like, this is the top, this is the bottom, this is the back and the front. And even with that, I'm just doing what you've seen me do a million times, just staring at the plank, not being able to figure out how it's oriented. Don't see it. And it was so sweet because all the other ladies in the group would just take my plank out of my hand as I'm just staring with it and just turn it around. Right. Okay, it goes this way. I just don't know if I'm ever going to be overcome that. And that's sort of like my Rain Man thing I'm looking forward to, is I'm going to get to drive as slow as I want. When I'm building something, I can just sit there and I was so careful to do my measuring correctly, and I still measured everything the worst of everyone. And just, you know, you're not supposed to measure. You're supposed to mark. Like, don't measure, mark. That's what she told us. So line up your marks perfectly with these awesome little tools that, like, these little handheld tools where you just roll it out of the plank and it has a little nail in it and, like, puts a little divot. And then she showed us how to do the divots to, like, balance out where the center is without measuring. So cool. So satisfying. But just to get some scrap wood and just work on those super basic, like, 101 skills over and over and over again until I get comfortable with the absolute basics, and then probably have to return to those basics constantly because I just don't think I'm a natural at this sort of thing.
And so when you see it, when somebody helps you, you know, put the planks in the right position, mm-hmm. then is there a light bulb moment? Like, are you much more certain once you see it in the correct orientation? Or even then, it's like, I don't know.
Well, yeah, it makes sense. But then if they were to pull it apart and say, okay, now you do it, I'd be like, ugh.
Okay, yeah.
I just don't see it, which is fine. I mean, if I ever make something, any good carpenter is going to look at it and be like, what hack job is that, amateur? I'll be like, oh, totally me. And I'll own it. You know, I'm never going to be great at it. But I will be able to drill something.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have the information. I'll know, for example, you should always do your drill holes first and not just drill a screw directly into something without the drill holes first. And I know why. Now, maybe I won't measure my drill holes perfectly and there won't ever be a straight line, but I'll know the technique. That part I'll yeah. retain.
Oh, you just cheat and get self-driving screws.
Sure, she loves to cheat. She's like, well, she's a professional. She needs to do things as fast as possible.
Right.
And
right.
also she said that she started out as with the hand tools because you need to know that craft. You yeah. need to know how to do things with hand tools, which is also really cool and satisfying. But if you're building a piece for a customer, you obviously,
right.
it would take five times or 10 times as long with the hand tools than yep. with her power tools. But I just love everything about this story. This started like 30 or 50 or 60 years ago or something, just women who wanted to take carpentry classes and were told they couldn't. So they started their own Stichting, which is like the Dutch word for foundation, yeah. and got somebody to teach them. And they've just kept this like social housing studio forever, for decades, and now these women are kind of getting older and they don't want to do this anymore, so they passed it out of this younger group of all women carpenters and just gave them all the tools. I just love this.
Yeah,
I'm gonna
great.
Get Kai on the podcast to tell this story. This is the perfect story of women building their own culture in their own way in their own time, this mantra that I'm spreading out throughout the mm-hmm. world. And the tools are the stationary monstrous tools that are that kind of army green color. She said they're older, but they work. But I'm like, you know what? I bet those tools, as old as they are still going to outlast any new version that you would buy today
right.
that does the same thing. And I just loved everything about it. But yeah, you know me. Like, I don't like passing the time. I don't like games. I don't like activities.
Right.
If I do have free time, I want it to be something that's productive. And so in the time that I do have when we're not working on the business, you know, I'm doing my carpentry, I'm learning my swimming technique, and then the next two things I want to do are CPR and then maybe some basic self-defense.
I had teach CPR, or at least it might have changed since back
in
the day
when
they taught us.
But I
want
to get a certification. Oh, and this is the other thing, yeah. listeners, that's so annoying about Michael, is I came home with this weekend of this new knowledge, and he already knows so much more about carpentry than I'll ever know, because Michael just knows kind of a lot about everything, and retains the knowledge, and he has his skills, and it's just annoying living with somebody that's like so competent.
I do not know much about that
you
stuff
that,
at all. I
do.
Enjoy watching Norm Abram mm-hmm. and I'll watch, you know, New Yankee Workshop. Mm-hmm. And I have acquired some tools over the year. We don't have a jigsaw. I've never particularly found a need for a jigsaw, but it's certainly a good thing to have. So, mm-hmm. so we will get a jigsaw.
And a pillar drill. We're getting a pillar drill
like,
too.
Yeah. Like a drill press, I think. Or, yeah,
well, we call maybe. It a pillar drill in
okay.
my circle.
Okay.
Of carpenters, so we'll be calling it a pillar
carpenters.
Drill.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think, yeah, stuff like that is certainly helpful. You know, it's great to have the workshop all kitted out. But, you know, there is kind of a chicken and egg thing there as well. Like, you want to do these projects, and then sometimes, you know, you need the tools, but then other times you just, like, I'm not sure exactly what I need this tool for, but... I'll figure out what to do with it after I get it. I mean, that's certainly what a pillar drill would be to me right now. I don't know why I would need it, but it's great to have. I mean, especially if it's not so large. I don't know if it's like a freestanding one that you're talking about. Probably not.
No.
It would like sit on a bench or something
mm-hmm.
And could possibly be put away even. Although it's probably a huge cast iron monstrosity, which is awesome.
It's not that huge. It's pretty huge, but she said as big as it is, it's not that expensive.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think depending on the kind we're talking about too, you can angle your work service in those too. So, you know, one of the nice things about the simplest sort of drill press is that you know that you're always getting it plumb or square, you know, your drill. Whereas if you're just using a hand drill, mm-hmm. you will be off at some angle unless you're using a drill block or something like that.
And
but
it's it's so much faster.
Yeah. And, you know, you can do, I don't know if you guys played with this stuff at all. Like, I don't have, those like multi-angle drill guides. You can do that kind of thing too, where they have those sorts of, I don't know what they're called. They're like pocket screws, maybe something like that. You know, you can join wood with these essentially hidden screws. So you're drilling in at an angle. Mm-hmm. So there's all kinds of clever things you can do.
So clever. And she even just has this. This is something I think I would use. It's just this kind of thick block of wood, and you can sort of lock a piece that you want to cut with a jigsaw in place mm-hmm. by just fencing it in with other pieces of scrap wood, drilling the scrap wood down into the plank so it's holding it into place, and then just taking everything off. So the plank has just like tons of drill holes in it everywhere, and then when it's getting kind of crappy, just like throw it away and get another one. So that's really... Again, like, how do I need to put this thing in a position to fix it? So how can I do that? Many, many different options. You don't have to have some big expensive, like, what's that thing mm-hmm. called? The wench. What's the thing that you torque it and it, the big.
To cut or
no,
to
just
drill?
No, just to hold
or
something to... into place. That's the big.
Oh, just like a vise.
A vise,
Yeah. But it's great to have one of those, especially if you have it, you know, attached to the work surface, you know, to right there on your workbench. Super cool.
And the workbenches that they had, they just made them themselves. Just scrap wood, you know, just
door
anything.
Desk idea, yeah.
But I was asking, you're like, how do you make the design? Because she had templates that we would use, and then you take the raw wood and you cut it like in the shape of the template, and the template's just particle board, anything. She said you draw it one-to-one ratio. So take a giant piece of paper mm-hmm. and draw it out, and then use that to make your template, and then take the template and use that to make the wood.
Right.
Just simple.
As you were comparing it to sewing kits.
Or
fabric
like
patterns.
The paper that we would use if you're, you know, taking notes in a meeting
tracing,
or something. You know, that's on a easel kind of situation. So. Yep.
And those, if you just start to look around for all different kinds of jigs that you can get for table saws, you know, that kind of stuff. It's just a homemade
dozens of different types of
jigs that you do for these things. Yeah. But once you put it together, then, you know, you can, whatever it is that you're doing, maybe working with strange angles or something like that. Yeah. Do it once with the jig, and then you're good to go. Mm-hmm. So, anyway,
I think I have just, even after the workshop, I have just enough information now that if I was to look at an instructional video on YouTube, I could follow it. Now, when I would try and copy it in real life, I'm going to make a million mistakes and cut everything backwards like 10 times in a row. But I would understand the basics of what was happening that I was watching.
Mm-hmm.
God, I'm so bad at that visual stuff. Like, even, you know, we had a guest over yesterday, so I was just making a little cake, and I saw this little thing on Instagram that shows you how you can flip the cake pan over, take the parchment, cut it into a square. It's like making snow, you know, like paper snowflakes, and then
cut
the square around the side of the pan
for the powdered
and then
sugar
make the,
dusting.
Well, no, make the circle, make like a pure circle as opposed to like tracing the circle. And so I followed it, and then I opened up my piece of paper and I cut a hole in the middle of the paper, which was still square. I did it exactly backwards rather than cutting the paper into a circle. I just don't know why I can't see these things clearly, but, and then knots. I've been practicing my knots.
Knots are cool.
Knots are easier for me to follow for some reason. But
I think it might be that hands-on, you look at the picture of the knot that you're supposed to do in the book, and maybe it makes sense. But then once you actually get it in your hands and start to see how things are working in three space, you're like, okay, now I get it. You know,
I think knots are just,
and now I could do it blind
to,
you
follow.
Know, so you
So that's my new habit is I want to learn like five knots. And as I'm having a conference call or a Zoom call, I'll just be like doing my knots.
That's great. Yeah. Yeah.
So knots, carpentry, CPR, swimming technique, and basic self-defense.
Cool.
I think that's enough. I don't think I want to get into electrical or wiring because there's just no room for error there. If you make a mistake, you've shocked yourself. I'm really scared of electricity.
Well, you're into building codes and regulations too. Once you get into plumbing and electrical, you know, there's what you might or might not be able to do lawfully in order to be up to code mm-hmm. or in line with your insurance company versus building a piece of furniture. You're like, well, that's not regulated. I can do whatever I want with that mm-hmm. or whatever.
And then the basics with music. So mm-hmm. just learning, you know, just getting the basics back in the muscle memory of the piano. And then if you could teach me a couple of chords on my electric guitar, because, you know, I've got so much free time. But it's nice to just have these things to turn to.
Well, and your brain operates differently, too, yeah. I think, when you're doing music or whatever.
Working with power tools. And then this summer in the garden, we're going to dig up all the grass and we're going to plant wildflowers. So that'll be nice.
Perennials.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to do a solar powered pond. I mean, this is like a day project, you know.
You say that, but I doubt if it'll be done by, and I'm not criticizing you. I will probably commit to being able to help you with these things. And for whatever reason, I might bow out, but no, we could be realistic about what kind of things. You know, I would love to have the floating greenhouse.
Mm-hmm.
That's
greenhouse a big project.
Relatively easy to do. But, I mean, you can have the solar-powered pump if you just want to draw the water up from
the lake.
You know, polar.
Yeah, but that water is brackish.
Yeah,
we could,
deep,
you know what,
enough.
We could get a desalinization project.
That,
little mini projects that we can scale. Yeah. That'd be fun.
Desalinization takes a lot of power, though, or something to push through the filter. Yeah, I guess you can just do elbow grease. Mm-hmm. But yeah, if we want to make lots of fresh water. So this is like zombie apocalypse stuff, though, right? I mean, you really are.
Well, we're headed toward the zombie or the climate apocalypse. So I just want to, I don't know, I just want to have skills. I want to have skills and knowledge.
Skills and knowledge.
I don't want to be the person standing there panicking, not knowing what to do. I don't want to be that person.
Right. I assume that you can get a CPR certification with just like one or two classes.
Oh,
I would think
so. I think
but
it's
also
a Saturday thing to do.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. With your carpentry class, is there another class in? Can you build on what you've done too? Does she offer those same sorts of?
Yeah, I think that she would. This was fairly customized, okay. And so I think if she wanted to continue to do workshops with us, we could do that. It's pretty expensive though.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'd rather just...
Yeah, but you get a spice rack. What's the price of a custom-made spice rack?
I know. Well, a lot less than what we paid for the workshop, but...
Depends what your woods are.
Yeah. And then, of course, I was already thinking like, oh, we could put a pool in and we could all go in on buying these tools together.
Oh, yeah.
But the tools are pretty expensive. And I'm like, you know, I bet people don't want to share their tools that much. You know, if somebody else breaks the tool, then who pays for it?
Right.
I would rather just buy the tools and then welcome the girls over to use the tools whenever they want it. They don't have to kick in.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, I'm wondering in sort of just middle class, you know, general bourgeois, how many power tools are going unused on a daily or weekly basis? I don't know. I mean, you got to have your, you know, full craftsman supply.
Yeah,
but I
the one thing
don't
I,
suspect
the
most
only
people
thing
use
I don't like about the power tools is how loud they are. They're very loud and it's a very violent noise that, you know.
Do you have any earplugs?
Yeah, but still I don't like putting that noise out into the world. No. I don't want the birds to have to listen to it. Yeah. I don't know.
Did you use in-ear plugs?
Oh,
or
we had to use they call them ear protectors.
Yeah,
they're just headphones.
Yeah.
But you have to. Yeah.
Yep. And your specs, you had some gogs.
I didn't wear the gogs because the gogs make your vision kind of wonky, so my glasses were enough.
Yep.
But I was thinking, like, the first thing that I'd want to make is my workshop itself, the tool shed.
Mm-hmm.
and then make the benches that go in it and the thing where the vice is going to go. And one of our neighbors is a professional, very high level, very high end builder, like housing builder. And I asked him if I could have all of his scraps to practice with. And he said yes. And he said he could help me, but he's pretty busy. But
cool.
You know.
No, but if he gets scraps, that's something.
Mm-hmm.
Got to have something to play with.
Circle economy, baby.
Circle economy. Yep.
And then also just learning about the different types of wood, like soft woods like pine or hard woods like cherry.
Mm-hmm.
But I was pretty sore after that weekend. My muscles were sore. So again, that's like the best workout is having something to show for your physical effort.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. Just from kind of controlling the power tools and I can see that. Good.
And also, I think because you're sort of tensed up anyway, because you don't have your flow, you're terrified of the equipment. And
yeah, you were probably clenching your jaw a lot.
That anyway. All right, I've done all the talking. What's good. Up with you?
Nothing. I got nothing to say.
You got nothing to say.
I don't usually. Mm. I mean, I always got something to say, but it's pointless, so I don't bother.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's up with the world? Well, spring is sort of coming.
Spring is coming. One of the things that we were talking about, because we haven't done one of these in a while, is, well, of course, Mr. Morris.
Have we not had that since? Have we not been on the cast?
We haven't.
Yeah.
So, we listened several times in a row, even though it's like a 4-hour podcast, to Lex's podcast with two people, academics on pro-Palestinian side and two on the pro-Israeli side. And I think a new celebrity emerged from this podcast. Finkelstein? Is that
yeah,
a
no,
Norm.
No,
Norm. Norm Finkelstein.
Finkelstein or Finkelstein. I'm not sure how he says it. But yeah,
he's
he's
on the pro-Palestinian side, who was hilarious to listen
surprised.
To.
Yeah.
So we had to go through a couple of days of talking in Norm Finkelstein voice, and I think we've gotten through it.
Mostly, we've gotten used to it. A little burst might come out now and again, but
yeah. But we were thinking we were going to do a whole episode in Norm Finkelstein voice, but I think it was best that we didn't do that. But one of the things that this theme that seems to keep recurring is people who are discussing this issue are comparing it to Europeans landing in the New World and the genocide of Native American indigenous people.
Yeah.
I don't know if that is as accurate a comparison as something that I have been thinking about, which I haven't heard anybody talk about, is Texas and the southern border.
Mm.
Because Texas used to belong to Mexico.
Well, Texas wanted to belong to itself.
Texas wanted to be its own country, and maybe even was for a little while. Yeah. And now there are tens of thousands of people encroaching the border who could possibly take claim to that land in the same way that the Palestinians take claim to that to their geography, and they all want back in. I think that that's a closer analogy.
We have to be careful with any of these
comparisons. We have to be extremely careful. I think it's a more useful analogy.
Well, but I mean, there is the issue. Look, the whole idea of, you know, nation states and how we draw lines on this globe, assuming that people think it's a globe, some don't. However we want to do that, you know, this all stuff is, it's arbitrary. I don't mean that in a negative sense particularly, but you know, we're making up these rules as we go, which is fine. I don't know, assuming that there's no way of approaching this stuff that goes beyond just what people decide to conceive into existence, then fine. There isn't a right or wrong way of doing this stuff, but we're making it up as we go. But it's just based upon a collective agreement about what borders are and who lives where and who's entitled to what and whether a particular group of individuals, you know, constitutes a people for purposes of self-determination. And these are complicated issues. And as soon as you bring in any history, that's going to complicate it even more, because then all of a sudden it becomes, well, it didn't used to be this, and now it's this, and how did it go from becoming what it was to what it is now? And for many people, some of those answers will lie in the past, even before it was whatever it was that we're comparing it to. So there's always this, I don't know what the start point is supposed to be and when you're supposed to say, this is when we're comparing everything bad or good that happens has to be done from this point onward. And, you know, we're just resetting the slate. And therefore, if from that point in time, Party A has aggrieved Party B more so than Party B as Party A, then you say, you know, this party is due this, and this other party has overstepped what's permissible, blah, blah, blah. But who can agree about what the right point in time is to begin this analysis?
Mr. Botticelli!
Words have meaning, Mr. Banjo-Kazooie!
Your diarrhea of the mouth of this endless stream of stupidity is causing my insides to roil and dissolve into actual diarrhea in my pants.
On page 37, your imbecility. No, he's, what can we say about Norm? If one were sympathetic to Norm's position, which I would by and large consider myself, he was nevertheless, in my view, entirely unpersuasive. He was schooled by any reasonable analysis by a fella calling himself Destiny. That tells you all you need to know about N. Finkelstein's debate techniques. Now, we could just say, well, you know, debate, meaningless, or, you know, meaningless point scoring, blah, blah, blah. What we're really talking about is right and wrong, or, you know, maybe even good and evil, and that's entirely separate issues about whether someone can make their points persuasively. Anyway, I don't know anything about, didn't know anything about Destiny prior to this, but regardless of the source of his information and how long he's been aware of some of this information, I don't see how anybody could listen to or watch what happened there and think that he didn't come out on top of this, granted, expert in these issues insofar as he's been occupying his mind with these ideas for a long time. Finkelstein is that, but nevertheless, I think he made a fool of himself.
All hail Finkelstein.
He's very entertaining. I hope he gets a reality show out of it.
That Destiny guy, I just wish he'd get a haircut. Because he talked so unbelievably fast.
He does.
That was like Amazon.com level fast. Finkelstein prided himself in the slow drip.
Because of how meaningful words are, yes.
Yet the guy to his right, I forget his name.
Rabbani, I think.
Rabbani.
Yeah, I believe.
There's a difference between speaking slowly and speaking with authority. So Rabbani was so commanding. He was always calm. I wish I could be calm like that. I try so hard. I just think that is so cool. People who can just no drama Obama, stay calm through the whole thing. He spoke deliberately. He was incredibly compelling. He had, you know, just way more academic authority than Finkelstein to his left.
Yes. Despite not being a capital A academic.
And he didn't have to explain his own personality. Women do that a lot too, which I wish we all need to stop doing that. Like always apologizing for, sorry that I'm taking up too much time, or that I, you know, I talk really slowly because, you know, but Finkelstein was doing that too.
There's a Schumer sketch about that, isn't there?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
But yeah, he was quite the caricature.
He was. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, maybe this is style over substance or form over something like that. But I personally am much more drawn to, you know, Rabbani's style. I would tend to find that more persuasive. It doesn't bother me when people talk quickly, particularly. There are those who probably do it in more of a kind of con man where they are actually just, you know, bombarding you, and there might not be much there, but there are people who can very quickly formulate their thoughts and will put them together into meaningful sentences very, very quickly. And when that happens, that's fine. It's mm-hmm. if it's, as long as they're actually saying something. And Destiny was making points, I think. Again, I'm setting aside whether I tend to be more sympathetic to the points that he's arguing. But I do think he made the points.
Colin Quinn is a comedian who speaks very quickly, and he's very funny.
Yeah.
There's an art to it, and you can see other comics imitating his style. Like, I pick up on it. I think Tim Dillon does that a little bit.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Versus like a Mitch Hedberg, who's much more relaxed.
Or Stephen Wright, who's practically comatose.
Yeah, yeah.
In my brain, when I start to pick up the pace, I think it comes from a sense of insecurity. Like, if I don't make my point as quickly as possible, I'm going to lose these people's attention. I've got 30 seconds left, and I shouldn't do that because it's counterintuitive. If you can draw people's attention in by speaking a little bit more slowly and with authority and not getting so riled up all the time. Like, riled up can inspire people, but I'm trying to be more, like you,
be more like Rabbani.
Well, you're more like Rabbani.
I don't know.
When Meeks talks, people listen.
I don't know about that. Probably, you know,
unless it's me and Meeks is talking about role-playing games and no one's listening.
I don't do it consciously, but maybe there is something about, it's like the old Edward James Olmos type, you know, the Miami Vice sort of thing, where you actually draw the audience in, like you speak quietly and deliberately, you can literally get people lean in to hear what you're saying, you know, because it seems to have such import versus just being in kind of loud broadcast mode.
Mm.
There is, I suppose, a bit of a pressure there because I don't necessarily think that still waters run deep. And even though I might not say a lot of things, it certainly doesn't mean that when I open my gob, there is profound wisdom that's going to leak out of it.
No, I just realized that we have different, I wouldn't say areas of expertise, but in terms of communication, different talent. So if you're asked to explain something verbally, it's almost performative and it's very natural. And I'm sure you don't even realize that you're doing it, but you are at your best when you have to explain something verbally. You're just so calm, so articulate, so clear. And when I'm asked to explain something verbally, it just a mess. However, if I have to explain something in the written word, I'm much more comfortable with that, where I think you're like questioning every single thing. It takes you much, much longer. You're questioning everything that you've written before you hit send button or whatever. And in that area, I think I'm a bit more attuned to the skill.
Definitely.
So you're more verbal and I'm more written. Communication strengths.
I would definitely agree that I'm less effective at written communication. I don't necessarily think I'm good at verbal communication.
You're very good at verbal communication. But you know, now that I'm thinking about it, if we have to write something super important and I'm asking you to look over my shoulder, even in written, even though I think it's more painful for you, you have this gift of clarity that maybe I don't have, because usually your suggestions, I always take them like, oh yeah, that is a better way to say that. But the better way to say it, it just takes you so long to get there. So
I think partly,
but I would never have gotten there, even though I'm a very fast writer. So I don't know what that means.
Well, I think it's partly just kind of editing process versus, you know, how much spontaneity. And there's part of me that says the most truth, for whatever that might amount to, is probably in spontaneity. I mean, the more that we deliberate over each and every word, there's a kind of an inauthentic veneer that we're putting on that, maybe, but it could also just be seen as a more refined, you know, a polishing of the basic thoughts are there, and then just how do I, you know, try and represent them as best as possible. Also, I think I tend to maybe look at the meta a bit more, like saying, okay, but if you choose this word, then might that person not think this? And what about this one? Isn't this a little... I will often choose the wishy-washier version. Like, just, you know, be clear and direct. Like, yeah, but maybe I want a little ambiguity in what I'm saying, that kind of constructive ambiguity. I would rather not commit myself to this particular position. I would like something that could be read this way or that way. Maybe might be helpful to have that little fork for down the road.
That's just the lawyer in you. You withhold, and I'm like, let's put it all out there and get on with it.
I will have a tendency to withhold, yes. But that's partly, it's not just to improve my position. It's also because I don't necessarily want to burden other people with knowledge that I don't think they need to know or is helpful for them to know at that moment.
Yeah. That's valuable. And that's something I've learned from you as well.
Well, I don't know if it's true. I mean,
I think so.
It is something.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good talking to you. Mm.
Mr. Cello Violinista Piano. Spaghetti Bird.